family of a local teenager says she never would have left home without calling.
Just praying for the best. I want my daughter home, man. And if she can't come home, I just want to know, is she there?
These posters around the towns of Livermore and Jay beg anyone with information to come forward. Posters that Richard puts up every spring, never losing hope.
Tell me what happened to my daughter. Justin, just look me in the eyes so I can see her.
An arrest in a nearly four-decade-old cold case. Thanks to cutting-edge DNA technology, the arrest happening exactly 39 years to the day.
When Parabon Nanolabs used that sample to create 3D models of the suspected killer's face.
It's heartbreaking. We miss her, and we're going to find her. We're going to keep looking till we do.
It's like a never-ending nightmare. It doesn't end. It keeps returning and coming back.
And we're live. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and everyone watching this back as a recording.
Yes, thank you so much. So, Lauren is the brother of Kenny Novak. He's one of the Cape Breton Three, the three boys who were killed on the tracks in Smyrna, Maine, back on July 10th, 1970. So, welcome, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us again. It's been a while, so I wanted to make sure that the people who have not seen any of our podcasts or our previous podcasts, we get a chance to get to hear the story of the three Breton, Cape Breton boys. So if you don't mind, talk about your brother and then his friends as well. Kind of go into like the type of kid he was and what he's like growing up with.
Well, I want to take you back to July 5th, 1970. When my mother took my brother Kenny and Terry Burke down to a beach for a camping trip. There they met a gentleman or another teenager by the name of David Burles. They decided at that time to leave Inganish and for some reason head to the United States. On the early evening of July 9th, they skipped the border in just outside Houlton, Maine, and the place I think is called Hogston. When they crossed the border, they ended up at a place called Drake's Hill at an ice cream parlor. At that time, they were picked up by a guy by the name of Royden Hunt, who gave him a drive down on the old interstate to a set of train tracks where Royden dropped them off. At the same time, the Border Patrol was searching for the boys and they missed them.
So I'm just going to kind of stop you there, Lauren. Can you go into, you know, growing up with your brother, what's the age difference between the two of you?
Kenny was 15, I was 17.
All right, so you guys were pretty close then, I assume.
He was the youngest of the family.
What was Kenny like?
He was a long hair, had granny glasses, was quite involved in the youth movement in Sydney. He was your typical 1970 young hippie.
I couldn't grow enough hair to be a hippie. I would love to have been, but that didn't pan out well for me. Genetics, I guess.
We got a long point, Kenny and I.
Yeah, so you must have been friends with David and Terry as well, right?
I didn't know Terry. I did know David. I hung out with David in Sydney a little bit, saw him at the dances, whatnot. He was about a year younger than I was. At that time, a year was a big difference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how old was Terry Burr? He was 20, right, at the time?
Terry was 19.
19. And so this is Terry with the red motorcycle in the middle.
A young 19-year-old, I'm told.
Really?
Sydney was a town of 33,000 people. Different parts you went to different parts you didn't associate with because that wasn't your style. I was a downtown guy.
What was the border like at that time? Could you just kind of go back and forth between America and Canada freely, or did you have to stop and register or something?
When I was in Maine in August of that year, we didn't show passports or anything. We just basically drove through, told them who we were and told them where we were going, and they just let us through the border.
So they didn't, well, I mean, because it was before computers and stuff, so unless you were on some sort of like government watch list, they'd probably be like, okay, yep, have a good day.
That's about it.
So did the boys check in with anyone when they crossed the border?
No.
And they were going to, I heard that they were going to a rock concert or something for that, that weekend.
There was, that came out, a rock concert down in Boston or New York, and it also came out that I was going down to see a couple of girls I met in on the beach. So we don't really know why. There's also talk of them having about $1,000 on their pockets and going to go down and do a drug buy and come back into Cape Breton and sell it.
Yeah, so we're basically going to buy marijuana because back then it was a bigger deal than this. Or acid. But then kids like pulled their money together because they knew these three kids were coming, or it's supposed to be a fourth one too, I believe. But the three of them were going down to make the buy and they were going to split it back up when they got back to Canada, right?
That's right. I did
so
talk to an individual that did front them the money to buy the drugs.
And how much did he say he gave?
He said he gave him $800.
Which
in 1970 was a sum of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was there a fourth boy supposed to go with them too? I think I had read at one point.
Want to repeat that?
Was there a fourth boy that was supposed to go with them?
There was a fourth boy that was supposed to go with him, but he never did.
Do you know why he decided not to go down to the US with them?
I think his parents would have beat the living crap out of him if they found out.
Well, that could be. I know mine would have. All right, so the boys crossed over to America, to the U.S. Did they hitchhike to get into the United States?
They hitchhiked from Inganish to the border crossing, yes. They spent the night prior in a place called Fredericton, New Brunswick, at a motel room.
And that's in New Brunswick?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. One of my earpieces isn't working right. All right. So they went down there. They spent the night. And so this is July 10th at this point? Because they went down there on the 9th?
This is July. The morning is July 9th.
9th. Okay.
And they got a ride with an older gentleman that drove them to the border mid-afternoon.
And so then where did they go from there?
From there, after they crossed the border, they sneaked into Holton at a place called Drake Hill at an ice cream parlor.
Yeah, Jeff, do you have the Google Earth there?
Yep. Let's pull this up.
And I'm trying to remember, what's the name of that ice cream parlor, Jeff?
Drake's Dairy Bar.
Thank you. So they made it to Drake's Dairy Bar down here. That bright yellow line there is the Canadian border. Drake's Dairy Bar is in Holton.
Yeah.
We actually went up this area 2 weekends ago. Jeff and I did. And we got to stay at a place right across, like you could look across the street and see the Canadian border. They had these white poles that you could tell where the border was. That's kind of neat. First time I've been that far north. So if you can zoom in there, Jeff, to the Drake's. So they
we're not entirely sure exactly where it is. This is roughly the area because the business isn't still around.
Okay. So they get to Drake's Dairy Bar. Do you know what time of night this is at this point on the night?
This is about I can't say what time they showed up. Speaking to Royden Hunt, who picked them up, he picked them up at approximately 10 o'clock at night.
He picked them up from the dairy bar.
From the dairy bar, yes.
Now, there's some speculation that something happened there at the dairy bar, a fight or something. I mean, that's going to happen when you get teenage kids together. Is that something that you guys have actually...
There was an altercation, I'm told, with a couple other kids. I don't know what that... I never did find any more than that.
Okay. So the boys have picked up by Hunt. What did he say happened at that point?
He said the boys were sitting in the back seat of his car. They were counting money. The youngest one was tired and fell asleep.
So that would have been your brother.
That would be my brother, yes. That he drove them down to a train crossing on the I-5.
Oh, a train crossing.
Right where the pin drop is.
Okay.
The I-5 didn't look like that. It wasn't a divided highway at the time.
Oh, okay. So he dropped him off there at the railroad tracks.
Yes.
Did the kids talk to him at all inside the car? Did he ask what they were doing down there? Or?
They just told him that they're traveling around.
Did they pay him for the ride or anything?
Sorry?
Did they pay him for the ride or anything?
No. No. He said their feet were wet because his car was wet in the morning when he checked it.
What other conversations did they have with him? Did they talk to him about maybe border crossing and someone looking for them or anything like that?
Royden told me they never mentioned how they got into the States. All right. Just that he felt there were illegal aliens at the time. Because they wanted to be out of sight.
Right, especially if they want to get off at the train crossing, right? If you're walking down that way.
It never made any sense about getting off of the train crossing because they didn't know where the train crossing went.
Oh.
Did he say if they requested to be dropped off there, or did he just decide to drop off there?
That's what he tells me. They wanted to be dropped off of the train crossing.
That's weird. So he drops them off at the train crossing. Now, where does the... Because it's my understanding as well that Border Patrol may have been looking for the boys. Where did you hear that from?
Well, now you're scratching my memory. Actually, from newspaper clippings.
So Border Patrol may have known that the boys had crossed over. Do you know how they would have known that? Or did they come across the boys?
The boys tripped some sensor. An alarm went off in the border house that they had illegals crossing into the States.
So did do we know who was looking for them? Like the name of the Border Patrol agents?
Again, that's in my Facebook page. I've old age creeping up on me, memory slipping. But it's his name, and the ironic part about who that Border Patrol officer was, I was told, was transferred down to Texas within the next month after that happening.
So I think it's like, I know the backstory and stuff, but the people watching may not. So they may be having a hard time trying to piece this together, but basically we think that the boys were being chased by this Border Patrol agent. They're taking shortcuts through swamps or wherever, like not the best places. They get a ride with this guy, but they knew that the border agent was looking for them, right?
Yeah.
And did he
ever had them once.
Where was that? Was that back at the dairy bar?
At the dairy bar, yeah. And the three of them split up in three different directions.
So wait, so the three boys are at the dairy bar. They split up into three different directions to get away from the cops, but then somehow get back together to get a ride Hunt. Is it Riding Hunt? All right, so he drops them off at the railroad tracks, and do we know what happened from there?
That's a mystery. They were found on the train tracks at Timothy Road Crossing.
And I think Jeff mentioned that earlier, is about a mile down the tracks.
Yeah, as a crow flies... Oh, wrong button. As a crow flies, roughly a mile.
Yeah, with that curve, you're probably like a 1.25 miles, something. 1.25 miles, maybe, for them to walk down the tracks.
And what time was that the next morning?
What time were they found?
Yeah.
Approximately 7 a.m.
Right, so they'd only gone a mile and a quarter in what they dropped off for maybe 10:30, 11. You would have expected them to make it a lot further in that period of time if they were planning on being on the tracks.
So the boys are, unfortunately, they allegedly were sleeping on the railroad tracks. And I think there's some speculation there based on, like, maybe because of the rain, they thought it was drier up there or something like that. But to me, that doesn't sound at all dealing with the wood tie. What do you call them?
The wood ties.
And the crushed rock and all that, like, doesn't sound comfortable at all. So I find it hard to believe that anyone would sleep on the road tracks.
At 4 feet, 11 inches in distance between the rails.
Right. So then you're talking scrunched up in missionary position, like, or whatever, like, crunched down to fit between those two rails, right?
That's right.
All right. So the engineer, let's talk about the train coming, approaching them. The engineer sees something on the railroad tracks, if you want to kind of get to that.
If the engineer sounds the whistle at the Timothy Road crossing, as he normally does.
Mm-hmm.
Folier, I think, was his name. He saw the boys about, I'm guessing, 300 feet prior to the train going over them.
And I think initially he thought it was like garbage or something, right? He wasn't sure what it was.
A raft.
A raft. Okay.
Debris. I heard two stories, raft and debris. Sounded the whistle, put on the emergency brakes. It was 19 boxcars and an engine. Nobody moved on the tracks
anytime soon. Yeah, he didn't. They didn't flinch. They didn't do anything. They just stayed right there, even with the horn going and the train barreling down on them.
Missy Jean says, "My thing is, I've slept outside of Maine like that. It gets cold at night. You don't sleep good. At that time in the morning, they would have been awake. They would have heard that train." And I think that's a good point, because the sunrise, I think that morning, was about 4:30, 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock sunrise.
So they would have been, you know, sitting in the sun for 2 hours. I feel like kids that age, they're on adventure. They're excited to be out there. I feel like they would have gotten up and been moving.
Yeah, absolutely. As soon as you get a little bit of sunlight, it's like, okay, it's time to move. Like, shake off some of the cold. Get going.
Thanks, Joe, for calling me out. I realized as soon as I said it. Joe says, fetal position, curled up in a ball. Missionary is a different kind of position.
Closer to that where they were dropped off is a graveyard. Somewhere's in that area. The guy was cutting the grass at 7 o'clock in the morning, and he could hear the train coming with the whistle blowing over a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
You said that that's near the drop off here.
And
somewhere's in there is a graveyard.
And say that You know, one person asleep on the tracks may not hear it, but there's no way three of them didn't hear anything. I find that hard to believe. And not to mention the rattling of the rails.
He got pretty good hearing as a teenager.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of frequencies that, like, even we as adults don't hear anymore because, like, they've kind of burnt out. But when you're 17, you still have, you should have all of that intact.
I don't know where the graveyard is, but he says it's close to the I-5.
And not to mention the rails themselves are going to vibrate, right? They're going to shake. So if those boys, I mean, I think the kids were all over 5 feet tall, right? And these tracks are 4 something apart.
See, we grew up in a rail city. We know trains, or we knew trains.
That's true.
We know this stay off the tracks at all times. I mean, cross over the tracks when you had to cross over them, but you didn't walk the rails, or very rarely did you walk the rails. I mean,
and
in the town, we had to cross a set of train tracks.
Actually, Jeff, do you want to play that video? We do have a video here of, was it Good Morning America or someone that had done
you could hear a train coming? We're setting up an experiment here. CSX Railroad giving us special access to the tracks. In fact, there are CSX workers just off camera here to keep us safe. There's actually a freight train on its way to us right now, coming down this track all the way in the distance. I'm not sure if you can see the headlights or not. I'm going to stand here with my back to the train, not paying attention like so many of us do when we're on the tracks taking selfies. We're going to see how close this train gets before I can actually hear it. Would I have time to jump out of the way?
Okay, here comes the train.
I don't hear anything at all.
It's getting closer and closer. I don't know,
I can still kind of hear it there, but maybe it's just the microphone.
I hear it right now. And here it is. Look at that. It's basically right on top of me. They are pretty quiet for as big as they are. That is an amazing example, proof that you just don't have time to jump out of the way.
Watch it.
Now, that's a new train, and he also wasn't going very fast. And I could.
He wasn't blowing his horn either, right?
He wasn't blowing his horn. Those things are loud as hell.
You've got an old engine from Bangkok Aristocrat Railroad. I mean, it must have been loud. Old tracks that aren't maintained properly. A bed that's probably hasn't been laid, new gravel and who knows how long. Tracks that haven't been sanded or ground.
Right.
I saw that video before and I thought it's a newer train.
No, yeah, it's absolutely a newer train. Like that thing, yeah. Like there are trucks that are louder than that. Like, there's no way that's like the same thing as a train from back in the 70s.
So Lisa says, I wonder if they were put there when they were already passed to make it look like the train did it. Otherwise, why wouldn't they hear the train or feel the vibrations?
Absolutely. That's kind of what
I want to look at now. So when the engineer climbing up on him, he never sees any movement. In fact, he says that he believes that the boys were zipped inside their sleeping bags, right? Like the sleep bags are covering the head and everything, right?
Well, an interesting thing that I read in the newspaper clippings, 3 bodies and no blood.
Why wouldn't there be blood?
Were they killed somewhere else and the blood drained out?
Or blood stopped pumping? Like,
I mean, if it's not pumping, you still got a blood splatter.
Yeah.
And someone else had asked, how much money did they get on them?
They were found with a little over a $5 bill and a bunch of change, adding up to a little over $7.
Right.
So Royden Hunt sees them with a handful of cash. They're counting, drops them off the railroad tracks. The next day, they're run over by a train, supposedly falling asleep, and no cash on them.
And no ID.
And no ID. That's right. So, and the two older boys would have had IDs. I'm not sure if your brother would have, but The other two had motorcycle licenses, so it seems like they would have had IDs on them, correct?
Wasn't found. Missy makes
a good comment here. It's not only the horn and like the vehicle or the train rumbling, but also trying to stop with the brakes. You're going to hear that as well.
I would think so. Especially in the summertime.
The boys are hit. The engineer probably can't believe what has happened. They immediately call the sheriff's department, I believe. Was it sheriff's or a Holton PD? Sheriff's department?
Aristocrat County Sheriff.
So, sheriff's department shows up. What did they do as far as, like, did they make a crime scene? Did they... I mean, what...
Well, what they didn't do, the first call from the train crew was... of course, back to the dispatch yard, which is approximately a couple miles away from the accident scene. Dispatch phoned the Aristocrat County Sheriff's Office, but the word spread pretty quickly in Oakfield that there was a train accident. And now you have got a bunch of locals coming down to look at the train accident. Mm-hmm. Two deputies showed up, one by the name of Philbrick and Scobie. Maybe sometime later, Crandall showed up. Crandall lived in Oakfield, but his uncle died the day before, so I don't really know if he's even there on scene at the time.
Does the reports show that he was there on scene?
Two deputy sheriffs. And
but not, it doesn't say anything about Crandall necessarily being there.
There's no indication that Crandall was there, was first there, no. Crandall showed up sometime later when the boys were picked up by Dunn's funeral home.
So
and that they were never transferred back to a hospital.
And they never like took a temperature of those boys either, right? To tell, like, I mean, had they done a body temperature check within 10 or 15 minutes, they would have been closer to, you know, the normal temp. But had they done that, the they would have rolled out like, if they were.
And you would be able to tell that, like, immediately after. Like, someone had to get there to, like, check on them, and they would have felt them, and they would have been able to tell if they were warm or cold, right? So,
that wasn't done.
Of course,
there's
not.
No indications in his autopsy report that was done. You're talking about body core temperature. No.
It would tell them like the time of death or estimated time of death. It'd help them figure that out.
It didn't do any of that. It was just a simple MD doctor that showed up. That performed autopsies when needed.
So then, where did they take the boys? They didn't take them to the hospital, right?
They took them to Dunn's funeral home in Holton.
And then who did the autopsy there for them?
I forget the doctor's names. It's in the autopsy results if you can read them.
Do you have that Facebook page, Jeff?
I have the Facebook page. I don't know where the autopsy report is. I've scrolled back to 2020.
If you go to photos, it's in there.
Oh, okay.
And we should say that you can follow this case on... Lauren, you're the admin of this Facebook group, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's called Searching for Answers, the 1970 Death of Three Cape Breton Youths in Maine, and I'll share that link in here in the chat so everyone can go check that out. I just posted it. But, okay, so media, let me see. I believe these are probably the autopsies.
Crystal says, sounds like they were robbed. In 1970, $1,000 is a lot of cash. Whoever takes all their ID, etc., someone locally is like...
The strange thing about the autopsy reports, they were never filed with the state of Maine or their deaths until about the year 2000.
Yeah, so get into that. So the boys are at the funeral home. It seems like to me that they were just trying to push them back and get them out back out of the country, right? Like, without calling it something that happened in Maine, it was a Canadian
within
issue.
Within 24
something.
Hours.
Now, that's not something typical, right? Don't you need a death certificate to be able to take a body across the border?
Without a death certificate.
Right. You need a death certificate to cross the border with them, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Never happened.
It never happened.
No.
We've had a few cases in Aroostook County lately, so I'm sure the sheriff's department loves us.
That what you're reading there is the toxicology report.
Yeah, so none of the boys had any drugs or alcohol in their system, correct?
No, that's what this report is saying here, too. Yeah, this is that report. No alcohol or barbiturates were detected. A trace of formaldehyde was detected.
That came from the funeral home.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
It had to have been like the table they were put on or something, right? Or they somehow put formaldehyde in them. Somebody made a comment.
They were done on the autopsy table, and I would imagine all autopsy tables have some traces of formaldehyde on them.
Yeah.
Right.
So Joe Sargent said that, I wanted the same, or if it were that they were under the influence and passed out, even being drunk, I would imagine them would have woken up from the vibrations. So here the autopsy says they weren't drunk or
they had nothing in their system. This guy's sideways, so I can't talk my head and try and read it.
Turn your head.
That's what I'm doing.
Crandall had this figured out in 4 hours.
Yeah, let's talk about that. He may or may not even been on the scene, but he decided it was an accident. The boys fallen asleep on the tracks. In fact, I believe your folks had gone down a week or two after, and there's still like debris there at the location, right?
I was there a month later, and there's still debris from the sleeping bags were still there.
Off.
And Crandall's answer to me was, are we supposed to pick up every little piece?
Kinda, yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, you got the good one. If you want to bring that one back about Monroe later, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about this one. That's kind of funny, like foot in the mouth type scenario here. So what is this?
What is what this about? Is? At about 2002, I decided to put a plaque down at the scene. Piece of steel that I welded up and put the names and the date on it.
Actually, I'm sure that I do have that here. I'll show that real quick.
Yep, there it is there. I contacted the, I guess you would call him administrator of Aroostook County. I guess he didn't like my statement that I want to put the plaque there, so he contacted the Sheriff James Madore, and Madore wrote him back and said, I guess I spoke to Novak and told him no, and that will be the end of our problem with Mr. Novak. I don't really know what he means by that.
Yeah, that sounds like we're brushing under the table, like getting rid of it, right?
Like, yeah, like you're what a nuisance this guy is. They're trying to find out what happened to his brother.
We're gonna shut him up.
Yeah.
And he's telling me that we're not even interested in dealing anything with it. He told me I was invading a private property and that it would be removed. I'm going to throw it in the field on the side of the track. No one's going to see it.
Right.
Or no one's going to steal it. I'm not defacing anything.
Jeff, can you zoom in? I just want to read that last part where he says, this is his letter to you. I do apologize for the email sent to Doug Bayou, or however you say his name, and mistakenly also sent to you where I said, this should end our problem, Mr. Novak. That was a misstatement on my part, and I apologize. Like, so he's admitting that he fucked up.
That's when I started chasing after the police report. Never did get it.
Imagine my shock. Guys.
Lori, I was hoping someone would bring this up. Not to take away from the story, this story, but is this the same Crandall that Eric's parents hired as a private investigator that now resides in Florida? So this is his father. So same name, Daryl Crandall. So this was the investigator Crandall's father. Eric's parents didn't hire him. The police department did to look into what happened with Eric and Officer Cole.
I saw the video or saw the podcast.
Oh, thanks. What do you think? Did my hair look okay?
Well done.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to it.
We can't all be lucky like you, Lauren. Get a full head of hair. Out riding a Harley. 72. Wow. You look good.
So, a lot of people, not a lot, some people say they're going to look into the situation. Nobody ever has. And they just seem to have dropped out of sight.
So, Lisa, this is Lauren Novak. He is the brother of Kenny Novak, one of the three boys that were killed on the track back in 1970. So, the boys got illegally sent back to Canada with no death certificate. How soon, like, did the families up there have a funeral for them jointly, or are they all separate, or how did that work?
The three of them were waked in the same funeral home. My brother had a service for himself. Two of the boys were Catholic. My brother was Protestant, so that explains that a little bit. And the other two had a service at a church.
Okay.
Very large funerals. I mean, I was surprised at the turnout.
What was go ahead.
I'm also surprised the lack of coverage the local paper gave this episode. The Cape Breton Post. They put it on page 3.
The hometown newspaper, because there's so much going on in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, that they pushed this down to page 3.
Yeah.
What did the parents think about all this? Did they think that there was something shady possibly going on, or did they just take what the sheriff said accident?
The parents are all gone now, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I did talk to David Burrell's father here about 10 years ago. He never believed Crandall. My mother wrote Crandall 2 or 3 letters over her until she passed away. And even Crandall himself says he still stops at the crossing and wonders what really happened.
Of course, Sheriff Crandall has passed away now.
1997.
Donald Bowles says check for temp was discovered in 1869. They invented a device to make it work in 1967. So maybe it wasn't common practice. So someone else had asked that if that's common practice back then. So it sounds like it's still fairly new
technology. We're talking Holton, Maine here of a population of 7,000 people.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to recover this case, Missy. She says, I've lived in Maine most of my life and I'm just hearing about this. It's so sad.
So I personally think in 1970, with the hippie movement going on and whatnot, I think Crandall just wanted it out of his hair as quickly as possible. That's the way it looks to me.
And I might not be remembering this correctly, but I feel like last time you had mentioned that maybe he made a statement like that, like a bunch of hippies, no one's going to care. Or is that just what you thought he was thinking at the time?
Crandall didn't like me.
Why not? You're a nice guy. You probably tried to ask too many questions too.
He, when he took my parents in his car, he sent me in with one of his deputies. So I wasn't that close to Crandall's who actually talked to him. I had a deputy on me all the time.
So that's interesting. So he didn't even want to ride in the same vehicle with you because you were a
He took two cop cars up there with him.
It's weird.
Oh, if you look, go ahead.
If you look at the picture of the train section, you can see a field just above there.
Oh, can you bring that back up?
Well, this is... So I'm looking at it now, and I think that on our Google Earth, we had
that's
our
spot. Trinity Crossing.
Yeah. This is where they were dropped off, right?
No, they never made it this far.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I'll get the map Google Earth back up. Earlier. Yeah, I got to pull it back up. Doesn't let us have multiple things up here at a time.
There's a field right there with an entrance.
Yeah.
On the field.
Yep.
I asked the sheriff, and there's a bit of a bank there. I asked the sheriff, did you go up in that field to see if there's any tire marks from any vehicles? No. We never left the train rail.
It seems like if someone was going to put them on the track, that's the easiest way to do it, rather than putting your truck on the tracks, is to drive in here and get them up there.
And it looks like there's like an ATV trail that runs along the tracks there.
I'm not sure how long that's been there.
40 years later.
Yeah.
With a lake. Interesting.
So what does that tell you?
Were they drowned and bled out in the lake? I don't know.
So, man. So, and I know we're kind of speculating about all this, but if the Border Patrol was chasing them, I mean, do you think they had something to do with it, or do you think that Royden and Hunt realized how much money they had on him, said, "Well, I'm just going to catch up to him. I'll sit up here in this field and I'll ambush them and get their money." Like, do you? I think you've talked to Royden Hunt, right?
Yeah. I talked to Royden Hunt. He seems like an honest individual on the phone. If he's still alive now, I don't know. He had a business close by where he sold vehicles later on. He remembers the episode very well, of course. He had his car searched by the state police 2 days later after he cleaned it.
Why would he clean it? I mean, I know I clean my car at least once, twice a year, but it's just interesting that he cleans his 2 days after the boys.
The timing's a little convenient.
Or, killed.
All I'm saying here is I'm trying to imply the Rooster Crock County Sheriff's Office did a bad job.
Yeah, we've got that theme a few times lately. There's currently two missing people in Washburn, small little town. And they've botched both of those investigations. And now you're telling us about this one. I don't think I'd want to get lost up there or have an accident up there.
See, these deputy sheriffs had no formal training. They were picked, hand-picked. yeah, friend.
You're a friend from high school, so you can join the department sort of deal.
Yeah. And why they let the football field walk all over that scene? I don't understand that either. Were they picking up souvenirs? I don't know.
Yeah, you were breaking up. So you said that, like, locals all showed up at the scene and they start looking around, right? Like, they just let them walk all over everything and
pick up mementos? I don't know.
Or is that where the money went? Did other people pick up the money and
took off with it?
Right.
Could be.
That's so gross.
I think they should have blocked that area off.
Joseph, excellent question. He says, did the train company ever do their own investigation or simply default to the police report?
I never found any records from B&A, Bangor Roosecrock Railroad. They went into business and were sold to MMA, Montreal, Maine. And now they're gone out of business. The accident was never reported to the FRA in the States, the Federal Railroad Administration.
Yeah, you had said that last time too.
Never reported to them.
Wow.
And that doesn't make any sense at all to me.
What's this?
I said that makes no sense to me that it wasn't reported, because that's like regulated, it's mandatory, you have to.
I'm told because there is no damage done to the train equipment or property. That's why it's never reported.
What?
Oh my god.
Wow, priorities.
Like I say, I think Crandall just wants to shove it out of the way as quickly as possible and get on with his life.
Duke, what do you think happened?
I think the boys tumbled into a drug buy or drug drop from out of Canada into the States, and they had to be getting rid of.
So you're saying like something was going, because if you look at that field that you'd pointed out earlier, they could have, you know, back in 1970, could jump right back on 95 there, right? That comes right off 95.
I think we're getting some cocaine from Montreal or Halifax, dropped off by a small plane. The boys tumbled onto it and were killed.
Yeah, because it was back at that time, like, cocaine was trafficked quite heavily up in this area, wasn't it?
Well, that was the time of I believe Ronald Reagan, when he was hard on the drug coming into the States.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was Border Patrol. I don't think it was Royden Hunt, and I don't think it was the Sheriff's Department involved. I think it was a drug bust the boys tumbled into. They killed him. They put him on the train track. No blood at all in the bodies. And I just think it was just too big for Crandall to handle.
Unless, I mean, the Sheriff's Department could be involved with any drug trafficking as well, like certain officers.
Well, I think being Crandall only lived about 3 miles from the scene, and with his reputation, I don't think he wanted to get involved with a big drug era at the time. I think he was onto other things.
Stacy says, could they have planned to meet someone on those tracks? Because to your knowledge, they didn't know anything about the tracks even existing until they kind of drove by them and they asked it dropped off there.
Well, yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah. And that sort of rolls into what Crystal's saying too, is maybe they tried to deal with someone that was out of their league. Maybe it was someone on this side that told them, you know, hey, yeah, you wanna buy or sell some stuff from us. And yeah, maybe it was just some psychopath who wanted all of it, took their money, yeah, killed them.
Yeah.
Use this as a place. Yeah. Use this as a place like, hey, meet me on the railroad tracks. And yeah, maybe it was just one big setup from the get go.
That would have to happen at Drake's Dairy Bar.
Maybe right. That's where the initial conversation happened.
That might have been the contact. And then, oh, well, meet us at this spot. And that's how you, where to be dropped off at.
Yeah. Maybe that was part of the altercation. Maybe the negotiation didn't go so well, but they figured, okay, we'll go down here and just be done with it, you know? But no, this definitely, that clearing, I think for sure. And let me drag the little guy over here to see what that roughly would look like from the road.
Real quick, so Stacy says, didn't he say the boys asked to be taken to the tracks? Did, and you may not have gotten this information from Royden when you talked to him, but did they actually say, take us to this spot in the tracks, or did they just kind of happen to see the tracks as they're driving by and said, hey, can you drop us off here? Do you know? Or Yeah.
I think they saw the tracks and wanted out to get off the road from the highway, from the border patrol.
Yeah. Jeff, you and I just passed this two weeks ago.
So yeah, that's, and you have to figure, you know, that field was a pretty, it looks like a fairly intentional clearing out there. Like these trees blocking it now, very good chance that those wouldn't have been in there. This looks like it was an access point.
I think something that was in all the past.
Right. So these trees wouldn't have been there, but that's plenty wide enough for any vehicle to get in there.
Check on Google Earth, because you have that timeline up above. You could check historical photos. They're not going to be as good as now, but...
Oh boy, where did this even put me?
It looks like...
It moved me all over.
You're in Europe.
Yeah, it put me quite a ways away.
I'm quite sure that field was quite large at that time.
Well, let's see what...
And a two-lane highway.
Where's the... you said there's a thing to change the dates?
It's up top. I think it shows like a time or something. No, keep going. That one right there. I think it's that one right there. Does it give you like historical? Well,
this says 1985. Although nothing...
Oh, mine's different. It brings up a graph and you can actually go back in time with it.
To get back to how the boys were transported back to Cape Breton, they came back in three sealed caskets. Military caskets.
Paid for by the U.S. military.
No. Paid by the
Canadian.
By the families. But that's what casket Dunn's put them in. The vital mistake done by all three families was another autopsy was never performed when they got them home.
Right. They just took the funeral home in, right?
Directly from Dunn's to the Fillmore Funeral Home in Sydney, yes.
And most of the autopsy reports were pretty much identical. Like you just copied and pasted.
They're almost all of them. All three of them are almost identical.
Other than the name, the height, the weight, everything else is identical.
I blocked out the name to protect the families a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Out of respect. And my mother always said that she should have had another autopsy done because she didn't believe Crandall either.
And your dad felt the same as well?
All family didn't believe Crandall. But in 1970, you didn't buck the system very much. The RCMP, it should have been an international incident. External Affairs Canada should have been involved. The FBI should have been involved.
like, not only did Maine and the U.S. let you guys down, but your own government, Canadian government,
let us down. Your own government let us down, yeah.
Sad.
No reports of any kind ever found.
What do you think of this? Jess says, could they be exhumed and re-examined? Is that something the families have talked about at all? Or
after 50 years, I don't think there's much left. 54 years is not much left.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it would, I mean, unless it's a gunshot wound to the skull, then I don't think that there's going to be much there to actually see.
I thought about exhuming my brother, but, and honestly, after 50 years, I think he's at peace this long, he should stay there.
Yeah, that's something you shouldn't even have to think about.
All I'm asking, all I've ever asked of the state authorities is, show me the reports and admit you made a mistake.
Jeff, are you able to bring up the petition? I sent you the link a little bit ago. I love having you here, Jeff. You're so good at, like, just chasing after stuff.
You like putting them to work.
He's got like two or three monitors up there too. He's like, he's good at it. So this is actually something that we helped you set up, right, Lauren? Back in 2019 when we first covered the case. It's got 2,907 signatures. We're looking for about 5,000 signatures for them to reopen the investigation of the Cape Breton boys found deceased on the tracks.
And I just shared that in the chat as well. So if you guys want to sign that, it'd be greatly appreciated.
Have you shared that with anyone in law enforcement to see about getting this looked at again? Or
I've talked to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police here where I live. He was very sympathetic, but he said it's an American jurisdiction.
So it's more something that we would have to open up here.
And I even wrote you had a female governor there at one time.
We still do.
And I wrote her and she never answered me back.
That's surprising. She's usually really good about these types of things.
There's even a newspaper, which I laugh at. There was a newspaper story there that a police officer in Maine was talking about it 15 years later. And he was convinced the boys were snorting nutmeg. Now, it takes about 2 pounds of nutmeg to get a buzz on. I don't know where they get 6 pounds of nutmeg from.
So they're snorting nutmeg. That's asinine.
Totally.
No, Allison, we started 59 minutes ago, so you'll probably have to go back. I apologize.
Yeah, we're probably just about done this. So I did get that thing to pop up. I will just... I've already got something else. Sucks I can only share one thing at a time on here, but... so this only goes back to 96, but still it's a bit further back as far as what the... Oh, that's the wrong one.
What year is that picture?
Once I get it up, it will be from 1996.
I'm actually borrowing my brother's Camaro right now, and that's the year of his Camaro, 96.
So I tried to go back to 85, and it's all just one big blur.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if that's all of... satellite imagery just kind of looks like that. It probably just not great quality for the cameras. But you know, we go ahead about a decade and black and white, but yeah, it definitely looks like it was a lot more open down here.
Yeah, you can see that pathway is a lot wider open.
Yeah, that was 2006, 2007.
If you want to call in or text us a question, you can call us or text us at 207-619-2661. Or if you just want to call and say hey to Lauren.
I did write Daryl Crandall Jr. He never wrote me back.
Maybe you can hire... Oh, my God. That's what you do. We hire him to investigate this.
I don't think you want to hire him to investigate his own father.
That's what I mean. So he's a private investigator down in Florida, so... Yes, my brother's name is Toby. He let me borrow his car. Nice guy. I was in a car accident a couple weeks ago, so it's nice of him to let me borrow it.
The maintenance man from B&A Railroad, he had to remove the bodies from underneath the train.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that. They had to remove the bodies and stuff instead of like having someone...
There was only two dead at once until they found the body, an extra leg wrapped around the engine.
Oh, wow.
But it's no damage or anything to the trains that have to report it.
Right, yeah.
He had to certify the train is safe to travel.
That's gross. Complete negligence.
A reporter by the name of Rhodes did a very good job. And his reporting. And his stories are on my Facebook page as well.
And who is that?
Rhodes, the newspaper guy that came up.
Oh, because I was going to ask about, is it Ken Jim? Is that the gentleman who wrote a couple books about the case as well? Is that the name?
Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S.
Now, is there a gentleman named Ken Jessam that also wrote some books on the case as well?
Again, you got my memory going.
Yeah, I gotta double check it. Pretty sure this. Yeah, so Ken Jessam, he works at the Cape Breton.
He lives in Cape Breton.
Yeah, he's a Cape Breton guy. He wrote some stories about...
He wrote four stories.
Yeah, okay.
And they're in my page as well.
So please, if you guys can, take a look at those. And I think they're available on Amazon. Yeah, he did a great job with those, talking about the case.
The ironic thing is, if they go to the Cape Breton Post online... Those stories appear quite frequently by Ken Jessam. They're there today.
Alyssa asked, coming in and missed lots, what was their explanation for no blood? They didn't give an explanation for no blood.
Never gave one, no.
Yeah, I mean, if a body sits, the blood will kind of coagulate and congeal as well. So even if they were the blood killed would somewhere be in close... The Yeah, there'd still be something, right? But a lot of it would congeal. There wouldn't be very much, but still, like, it seems more likely than anything that they were placed there. But we wouldn't know because it doesn't seem like they did any sort of investigation whatsoever. They just showed up and said, oh, looks like some boys just fell asleep and got run over by a train, which is exactly what, in my opinion, a killer wanted to have it look like. The perpetrators wanted it to look like, and they relied on the cops being lazy, and they got what they wanted.
I think Jeff, you might be on something with the whole dairy bar. That's where they set up the buy, and then these people just kind of set them up because they're kids,
right? 17.
They probably weren't carrying any weapons or anything, and they set them up.
They weren't
carrying weapons because we're Canadians.
The name of that Facebook page again is Searching for Answers, the 1970 Death of Three Cape Breton Youths in Maine. And the petition is on change.org. It's called Reopen the Investigation into the Cape Breton Boys Found Deceased on the Tracks.
And we've added those in the comment as well.
Yeah, I'll share both of those again. First, I'll share the Facebook page for everyone to go check that out and join that. And then I'll share the petition so you guys can check that one out as well.
So the reason why we say they're in the fetal position, not that anyone really knows because they're inside the sleep bags, but that's the only way they would have fit between the rails. They were taller than the rails, Donna.
I don't think they're in the fetal position. I think they're laid straight out.
Like on the tracks, partially on the tracks.
I don't know how three people could lay on in 4 foot 11 inches.
Right. Unless they're laying, well, even shoulder to shoulder, they would have been stacked or something.
They had to be stacked.
I don't know.
Yeah, and Beaver Pond Farms says, so no reports from Border Patrol and no state police or federal agencies involved. No.
Nope.
Just the Sheriff's Department, and that was it. Accident. Call it good. Let's go home.
And Royden and Hunt's car searched 2 days later at a golf course. That took 2 minutes.
And what'd Jay Harvey says, I signed and shared the petition, so thank you, Jay.
Dude, yeah, what is
this? His car was searched at a golf course?
Royden Hunt and his friend, I forget his, the other guy, were playing golf 2 days later. Two police officers showed up, asked to see his car. They looked for 2 minutes and left.
That sounds very official.
Brianna Stratton looks like she showed up late. So this is about three boys are crushed by a train. There's very little investigation done. And this is Lauren Novak. He's the brother of one of the victims. And he and a lot of people believe that there's something else going on here, that those boys were dead before the train ever hit them, as yeah, they there, were supposedly a lot of sleeping on the tracks and never moved with the train barreling down on top of them.
Yeah, we're probably getting close to ending, Brianna. So I'd recommend, if you wanted to hear all the details, maybe go back and watch it, because there's a lot going on with this.
Will it be solved? I can't see it 54 years later.
Yeah.
I just would like to have the state say to the family, a mistake was made and we're sorry for it.
Yep.
At least that, right? There's.
If that happens in my lifetime, I will be surprised.
Well, as two Americans, we apologize to you, Lauren. I wish we could do something more, but it's horrible what happened to your brother and his friends, and that the investigation didn't resolve anything and just made the whole case
kind of get the attention it deserved.
Yeah, that's gross. The problem is that 99% of the people that were involved in this story are dead themselves now.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Even the train museum in Oakfield had at the time no information on that train accident.
Yeah. Again, there's so much more going on in Oakfield.
Oh, Oakfield, a thriving place.
Yeah. Like, you would have thought that would have been something major in their museum. But I guess if you don't want to talk about stuff. Lauren, it's good talking to you again. Really appreciate you sharing your brother's story.
I'm happy people are still interested in it and still want to know what's going on. And it just proves that, to me, the story that you just did about that other officer, some of them are not as good as they make out to be.
It seems like there's a lot going on in Roost accounting.
And my condolences to the family that happened to.
Yeah, they're really great people. They're going through a rough time right now. But, well, just want to thank everyone that tuned in and just wanted to say, you know, sharing this helps get these boys' story out there so that more people can hear about it and hopefully it makes it to the right people that can make something happen. So, you know, the likes and shares are greatly appreciated, and they help with this to.
And if you ever wrote this way, I got a big house, we'll take you fishing.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Go fishing, go for a Harley ride.
No.
We'll get a little sidecar for Jeff and I riding next to you.
I might let you take the dog for a walk.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Watch him ride the Harley. But all right. Okay, well, guys. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone. And thank you very much, Lauren, for being with us tonight.
I'll talk to you sometime later.
Absolutely. All right.
All right.
Good night, everybody. Thanks, thank you.
Search for 5-year-old Taylor Williams led investigators to Alabama this week.
So we have some breaking news from Florida. An arrest has been made.
Tonight, after years of agony, a glimmer of hope for the family.
Investigators spent hours searching through this house off Pennsylvania Avenue.
What could be a major development in the search for missing Alabama teenager?
Tonight, a stunning twist in the search for Taylor.
Somebody out there knows something.
They want to lay him to rest their way, not by somebody else's way.